This is The Takeaway. I'm Matt Katz, filling in for Tanzina Vega all this week. We begin today in Brooklyn, New York, where as many as 1,600 inmates held in a federal detention facility have been without heat, light, telephone access, and access to attorneys over the past week, even as freezing temperatures swept across the Northeast.
If you do not have heat in your cell, knock on those windows! If you are hungry, you want hot food, knock on those windows!
That's the sound of inmates inside Metropolitan Detention Center banging on the facility's windows in response to protesters asking about the conditions. Family members communicated with incarcerated loved ones from the sidewalk, yelling through megaphones.
Desmond! I hear you! Are you good? Are you good? Do you have heat?
Calls for a federal response grew louder over the weekend as visits from lawmakers drew increased attention to those being held at MDC. On Sunday, demonstrators stormed the facility but were driven back by officials who pepper sprayed them. But the pressure on the federal government to address conditions worked, and last night, power returned to the facility. Stephen Nesson is a reporter here at WNYC who's been covering the story from Brooklyn, and we're also joined by Nicholas Turner, president and director of the Vera Institute of Justice, which has looked closely at the issue of extreme temperatures and unsafe conditions in federally run prisons across the country. Nick, thanks for being here.
Happy to be here.
We're going to start with you, Stephen. Stephen, things got pretty intense yesterday at the Metropolitan Detention Center. You brought us that amazing tape. Give us a rundown of what you saw.
Right. So you heard that banging on the windows. That's when you arrive at the facility, that's kind of the first thing you hear. It's just the steady, like, drumbeat of hands on glass. And pretty much starting last Thursday, I believe, it really was brought to the public's attention that this facility hasn't had power for nearly a week. Heat was out. We had this frigid temperatures. I think the families of people who are in there were aware of the problem, but I think the general public became more aware of it last week. And elected officials rushed down there and protests began to grow. And you can actually access sort of the outside quite easily. You just go down a driveway. And so family members, protesters have been putting up signs with, you know, their family members' names on it. We love you. We're watching you. This is not right. And the protests have been gathering. And then Sunday is when you heard the tape that I got. A lot of elected officials were showing up throughout the day. Sunday was actually the first day lawyers were allowed to go in to see their clients. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if you mentioned, but these are pre-trial detainees for the most part. Some of them have been sentenced, but most of them are still awaiting trial.
They've just been charged with a crime but have not been found guilty of anything. That's most of the population inside.
Right. So lawyers needed to go see their clients because
sure.
they have cases coming up.
What are the lawyers and also the elected officials who have been able to get inside, what have they said about the conditions over the last several days?
Well, right. Sunday night, power finally got restored. But before that, inmates were actually in, it was lockdown situation for the most part. So people weren't allowed to leave their cells. Huh. They were sitting in the dark because there was no electricity. And the elected officials were there all weekend touring different floors, and they were reporting that some floors actually had heat and it was pretty strong, but others absolutely had almost no heat and inmates were freezing. The city of New York actually sent, you know, a package of like 600 blankets and hand warmers, generators. And the elected officials say they didn't see any of those blankets anywhere. I mean, there are 1,600 people in this facility, and they sent 600 blankets. So, you know, it's possible they missed it. But they said the conditions were pretty dire. And with the power out, that meant they didn't have access to the computer system. And so there are reports that many people didn't have access to their necessary medicine that they needed. Some people were getting their meds, but others were not. So that was, you know, one of the big concerns.
And based on your most recent reporting, is everything back up? Hot water, heat, electricity, or is that still not clear if it's consistent throughout the facility?
The heat, I believe, is not clear. Electricity is reportedly restored.
Nick, I want to turn to you. The MDC is a facility run by the Federal Bureau of Prisons, which operates more than 70 facilities throughout the country. How do Bureau of Prisons facilities generally compare to other jails and other prisons throughout the country?
Well, it's actually hard to know. I mean, I think the first thing that I want to start out by saying is that when you think about prisons and jails in this country and the fact that we have 2.2 million people locked up in probably around 3,000 jails in the country and around 1,500 prisons. So I'm not just talking federal, I'm talking state and local. This is sort of the crucible of two fundamentally powerful forces. One is that there is no greater government deprivation of liberty that exists than imprisoning people and then the government assuming their care. So that's one thing that happens in all of those facilities. And then the second thing is that they are absolutely non-transparent. Huh. And let's just use this as an example. It took a week with the heat off during a polar vortex in a federal jail 2 miles from Brooklyn Heights, just across the river from downtown Manhattan, with people banging on the walls and windows and federal defenders unable to see their clients, to bring this to attention in Brooklyn, New York.
Yeah.
That is indicative of, I think, a far bigger problem that we have in jails and prisons all around the country, except the problem is that we don't really know because they are so non-transparent. It's not as if you get to walk in and observe the facilities and the conditions and be able to talk to people. These folks are under the complete control of government. And so when government officials dissemble and say everything's fine, you know, we're dealing with a power outage, but it's, you know, everything's okay. How do you actually check and confirm that?
Right. What have, though, in the past, any complaints either from attorneys who have been able to get in or from inmates themselves, what have they said about this facility even before this past week?
Again, it's hard to draw sort of big conclusions, but there was recently a trial in Brooklyn where a corrections officer had been charged with multiple counts of sexually assaulting women who were locked in that facility. So I think we're talking about a complex of conditions that far exceed lack of heat or lack of light, but actually very dangerous conditions where people's where people's physical safety is threatened.
Wow.
So can I ask you, Nick, real quick, is that rare then that elected officials would get to tour the facility? I mean, they were there on Saturday and Sunday.
Yes, I think generally it's rare for two reasons. One is that I would say that for elected officials, there's a general incuriosity about what happens to the poor and mostly people of color who are locked up in this country. I would say that that is not just an incuriosity that exists with elected officials, but with the public at large. Mm-hmm. But also, while public officials can go into jails and prisons, those visits are generally controlled. They're choreographed. And so you don't get a chance to see everything. My guess is that this federal facility is probably in better condition and is probably better resourced than lots of jails and prisons around the country and is probably more subject to scrutiny than we would see in places that are farther away from media, that are farther away from a really active, progressive government.
You said that there's a blind spot among elected officials and the public at large that we don't think about this incarcerated population. Is it possible that the situation with the MDC over the last several days is going to lead to a broader conversation about how we treat the detained population in America and not just Bureau of Prison facilities, but county jails and state prisons and privately run facilities? Is that possible? Are we going to now have that conversation?
Look, I would like to hope so. I would like that Congress would hold hearings on this. I would like to see that this sort of maelstrom of attention actually does generate the kind of what I would describe as sort of transformational inquiries that really seek to figure out, well, how can we provide better oversight? But there's nothing new about this. Last year, there were in a disturbance in a South Carolina prison, there were 7 people murdered and over 20 injured. There have been suits against Texas prisons because they don't have air conditioning. And this is Texas.
Wow.
There was a 2013 hunger strike by people who were locked up in California prisons who were striking not only against solitary confinement conditions, but also access to health, to cleanly facilities, to decent food that didn't make people sick. So this is not a new chapter. That we have been living in this environment for a long time, and so I'm a bit skeptical that it will actually result in change. But I'm also extraordinarily grateful that a lot of elected officials have turned out and that the media has turned out, and that I'm sitting here talking with you today about this, because the light has to be shined on it.
There are national detention standards for the imprisoned populations of this country. I mean, are there any teeth to those standards? I mean, will there be any consequences for officials at this facility?
I don't know whether there'll be any consequences. I think I would say that the standards are difficult to enforce. I think that the standards exist in a broader paradigm that we have around criminal justice, which is that prisons and jails, I think the public agrees, and I would say that for decades, electeds and government officials agree, people have been completely satisfied with these places being places of deprivation and mistreatment and brutality and lack of respect for human rights. And so in that case, if that's the complex in which the standards exist, then then I think what we really need to be doing is fundamentally reimagining what these places are supposed to achieve and how you treat people who are in them as human. And we don't do a good job with that.
Just to look forward, Congressman Gerald Nadler, who's chair of the House Judiciary Committee, has said he will hold oversight hearings with the Bureau of Prisons. And I also was reading reports that a judge in the Southern District of New York will be having a meeting tomorrow to discuss with federal prison officials what she called disturbing living conditions in this prison. So there is some action happening. We'll keep an eye out for that.
We certainly will. Stephen Nesson is a reporter with WNYC. Thank you for your reporting.
Thank you.
And Nick Turner is the president and director of the Vera Institute of Justice. Stephen and Nick, thanks for being here.
Thank you.
And earlier today, the Department of Justice issued a statement on the conditions at MDC Brooklyn. They said they will work with the Bureau of Prisons to, quote, examine what happened and ensure that the facility has power, heat, and backup systems in place to prevent the problem from reoccurring.
There's a lot going on right now. Mounting economic inequality, threats to democracy, environmental disaster, the sour stench of chaos in the air. I'm Brooke Gladstone, host of WNYC's On the Media. Want to understand the reasons and the meanings of the narratives that led us here, and maybe how to head them off at the pass? That's On the Media's specialty. Take a listen wherever you get your podcasts.